You're listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
Joining me very shortly, we have Julia Faipoti from the Human Rights Commission coming on to talk about a new poll which shows strong public support for state care survivor reparations. We will also be talking about those who have been through state care and who have been abused while being in state care, as the Remembrance Day for survivors in state care was exactly this time last week. So if that is a topic that troubles you in any capacity, I'd recommend tuning out and coming back around 10:40 a.m. We will have news headlines with Cass. But joining me from, I assume, Pōnea Care Wellington, we have Julia Faipoti from the Human Rights Commission. Good morning. How are you, Julia?
Morena, Zach. I'm good, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Of course. Very glad to hear you. To have you, I should say. And to hear you, I guess. You mentioned that you have some words that you'd like to say before we get stuck into this corridor. So if you'd like to say those words, feel free.
Thank you, Zach. And just to all the listeners, just acknowledging for any of us with a heartbeat that this is a kaupapa that does affect us all. In particular, I want to acknowledge survivors and those who haven't survived who are listening to this corridor and the abuse and experiences they never should have had, and the responsibility for all of us to make sure this doesn't happen again. I just want to acknowledge the taumaha and heaviness of this. This isn't just something we are talking about or policy or laws. These are lives, faces, places, our babies and children, and so this was a big kaupapa, and I just want to acknowledge that before we get started. So tēnā.
Thank you very much for saying that, Julia. Very much, very much the case. Before we get stuck into talking about abuse and state care, I want to touch on some of, I guess, the attacks that you get being at the Human Rights Commission. As some folks in government, mainly David Seymour, have previously called for the remit of the Human Rights Commission to be reduced or for the body to be abolished entirely. Now, do you take these as empty threats, or do these really concern you?
Well, our role is Te Kāhui I Tika Tangata, the Human Rights Commission. Our main kaupapa and role and responsibility is in the promotion and protection of human rights and te tiriti in Aotearoa. Te tiriti o Waitangi is our unique human rights framework and lens of which we see things in Aotearoa. And that means we are independent from the Crown, from the kāwana, from government and civil society as well. So for those that attempt to interfere with us or call us out on particular issues, we hold firm to that role. That is our responsibility, and we are also the National Human Rights Institution for Aotearoa, which really means, in terms of New Zealand's ability to participate in the UN, we are attached to that system and that international system. The status and health and independence of us as a National Human Rights Institution, which is measured internationally, we're currently A status. When that is interfered with too much or seen to be interfered with, that can affect our status and not just our institution, but the government's participation there. So I would just say that ahakoa, whatever the government of any day calls out our institution, that is our role and our focus, and we hold firm to that. I would also add that with Te Tiriti being our unique human rights and constitutional document of Aotearoa, that we commissioned a Horizon poll for New Zealanders' views on Te Tiriti, and the commission is seen as one of the top three institutions that should be trusted for information on Te Tiriti and human rights, which number one was the Waitangi Tribunal. So we'll take our measure from that.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. November 12th, last week, this day last week, it was Remembrance Day for survivors of abuse in state and faith-based care. You said that it's a day for us to tell those survivors that we see them, we love them, that they are valid, and that it's a reminder for the government to act and be better in supporting these survivors. With the growing visibility of this issue and this systemic problem, do you think that was a day where they felt more seen or loved than perhaps they had in the past?
Only they can speak to that, for survivors to speak to that. For me and for us, it is a reminder of our responsibility as New Zealanders, for our responsibility as a national human rights institution, the Human Rights Commission, to make sure that we are listening to survivors. So The period of the inquiry is the largest inquiry and investigation this country has ever seen, and the findings of that of the abuse of, conservatively, it was estimated 200,000 children. 200,000 children were abused by the state in that time. And during that period, one of the consistent things that survivors spoke to, those who shared their corridor into that space that have informed the Royal Commission findings, was that they were never believed or listened to. And so for us, it is clear that every day, especially on that day, we allowed that we believe in the survivors. We believe what happened to them. We believe the survivors who didn't survive. We believe the survivors who didn't get to come out and speak their truth. And it's incumbent on us to hold the state and faith-based institutions to account and make sure this doesn't happen again. And it's not just on that day, it is every day. And action must follow. What we were clear on is it's all good for the kāwana, the government, to come out and say sorry, but if actions don't follow, that is very hollow.
Mm-hmm. On Survivor Remembrance Day last year, Prime Minister Chris Luxon apologised to those who suffered in state and faith-based care, and that apology came 5 months after the abuse in care Royal Commission of Inquiry was released, which highlighted a raft of recommendations to implement. Looking at the news about this issue, it's very hard. There's so much going on. It's really hard to make out what has been implemented from this report.
There are over 200 recommendations in the report, and I guess just to acknowledge that there are many strands of the state systems, individuals, people that have enabled abuse to occur, and those settings still exist. So from our perspective is to recognise that, and it doesn't just sit in political terms, so we have this government of 3 years, we have another government, whatever that looks like, of another 3 years, that this shouldn't be a political issue. It shouldn't be politicised. Enabling abuse of children should not be tolerated. Should not be okay, and we take all actions to stop that. With the recommendations, less than 10% have been actioned or accepted by this current government, so they are the ones who have received received the inquiry. You can't just cherry pick some recommendations because then we still enable the abuse to occur. It's like saying, oh, let's get a blanket to keep us warm, but we're only going to take some threads of that. So what's really clear is that this needs to be taken as a whole, not just bits and pieces. And so we will support and advocate for that to occur and cross parliamentary terms. This isn't actually something that can be politicised anymore.
Well, you mentioned there about cherry-picking, and that is what seems to be happening at the moment. As 3 weeks ago, the government proposed a law change which would prevent those who have been to prison for a serious crime from receiving any redress. And we know that being a survivor of state or faith-based care is one of many comorbid factors that leads to a life of crime. Isn't this proposed law change a slap in the face to survivors?
To all of us, it is rich to come from the abuser. The named abuser in the Royal Commission is the state. So to have the abuser dictate what victims of their harm receive is a perpetuation of abuse. Let's not forget the umbilical cord to the creation of gangs came from state neglect, abuse and alienation. The majority of whānau, and this is found through the Royal Commission, I should also flag that I was part of the Royal Commission in terms of working with survivors, so I had the privilege and responsibility of hearing from hundreds of our whānau. But the creation of the many whānau of the gangs were in state care. Almost 100% were in state care. And for those that are in prison, the majority of people in prison were abused in state care. I want to be clear on that as well. That doesn't mean the majority of survivors were are in prison or in gangs, but the correlation is clear. The state is the abuser. The whānau that are in gangs are largely, there's a causation there to state abuse, and many of our whānau in prison, there's a correlation there to state abuse as well. Human rights and the right to healing and to be heard and believed does not stop at the prison door. If our state gets the keys and as the abuser gets to determine who is worthy, then that's a perpetuation of abuse and shouldn't be tolerated. We will be firm on our submission as a Human Rights Commission to call that out. Human rights don't stop at the prison door, and the state needs to hold a mirror to themselves and not be deciding who is worthy or not, because they are the abuser.
Yep. It's similar to how the state often positions itself, or sorry, critics of the court's role in Treaty of Waitangi settlements often say it's quite clunky, but if you give it to the state, they're a biased party, just like we're talking about now. There's been a lot of talk about some kind of redress system for survivors in state care being an independent body. Do you think that there's a likelihood that will be implemented in, in the next few years? Is that a cross-party consensus?
Needs to be. I mean, the recommendations from the commission were really clear around that, around redress, about it being an independent survivor-led redress system. And what we currently have, and the stories of in the current system of survivor experiences, is that to approach the system was being violated again, that the system itself was questioning whether, again, whether to believe their trauma or not. And so the recommendation around that came out before the inquiry finished. So that was about 3 years ago that came out, and the government at that time was the previous government, and this time their actions have not taken that on board. There was a redress design group set up with survivors to look at the transition and the setup of this independent system, and what's been clear since then is that that has not been followed, their advice has not been followed, and the recommendation has not been followed. So right now it's tracking that no, that's not going to be taken on board, but it's incumbent on all of us. We don't need to ask again and re-traumatise survivors and go, what is the answer? The map has been provided by the inquiry, which comes off the voices of children experiences and survivor stories into this. So this needs to occur. It's not currently, but we need to be holding the line on this. Independent redress survivor-led system.
It's 3,000, I think I read it was 3,000 different testimonies given for that inquiry. Just a massive undertaking, a massive, massive undertaking.
drop in the ocean in terms of that, the expected numbers for that. So the inquiry noted at least 200,000 children were abused in state care. In terms of those that came forward, yes, 3,000, which is massive in and of itself.
Now, as sad as it is to say, the contemporary state care system still isn't up to scratch. There's still many cases of harm of various stripes. I think what last year or this year, Oranga Tamariki reported a spike in harm in state care, highest in 5 years. So, what recommendations from the inquiry can we use to improve our current services? Does that mean abolishing things like Oranga Tamariki and building from scratch? Does it mean re-implementing Section 7AA of the Oranga Tamariki Act, which is designed to honour te tiriti and recognise the importance of culture and whānau for our Māori children? What can we do?
Whilst the inquiry focused on the period of 1950 to 1999, what was clear within the inquiry and the findings of Children's Commissioner, Manamokopuna, and independent complaints processes that exist in terms of our children in the contemporary setting, is that our contemporary settings and system from the 2000s, which was SIFs, and it goes into OT, those settings are still structured in a way that enabled abuse in the past. So this is not historical, it is current, and we enable and allow it. We have seen and heard stories out of Manamokopuna, out of the Children's Commission, out of our inspections into what I like to, what I call, quite frankly, a kid prisons and places where abuse is still occurring. So absolutely, this is not something that is in the past, and I think in terms of government responses or people taking positions on this, is thinking that it is historical and it's only in one place and time. Actually, right now we have children. We have children in state institutions where the settings still enable abuse to occur, and abuse is occurring. The solutions that come from the Royal Commission in terms of some of the visions that were captured there, and are not unique to the Commission, by the way. There are so many community organisations, whānau organisations, iwi and hapū, who have spoken about what is needed to support the true care of our tamariki, mokopuna and children. In short, it is something where, yes, the state system, power moves from the abuser, from the state. resource is put in the hands of the family and those around them to support them, to love our children, to care for our children, and to be supported when you don't have those resources. We're now a few generations deep in terms of the numbers of whānau. The sad thing is when you go into these kid prisons or care residences, and this includes institutions, include boarding schools, disability-focused schools, residences, mental health residences, is that it is often the same whakapapa lines. It is the same whānau that are in there where care has not been provided by the state, and then they continue. So we need a focused resource. This is a state-funded abuse, billion-dollar-funded abuse, and the transition of that resource into the hands of people who can love our children. Mm. One of the survivors who has spoken, and it sits with me, who spoke about what no one should have care of our children, of a child who does not love that child. Our current system places children into a place where they don't belong, and they are told repeatedly they don't belong. Mm. So the news, it's not a new system, it's a removal from the current place and moving the resource where it belongs, where heart beats, care for these children, and our families are supported to look after them. This is not to say hand and walk away. It's not as simple as that, but it has been mapped numerous times. But the state, the default position is to keep the power and the money in the state, and that needs to end.
Mm-hmm. It does indeed. This government has infamously trialled a military-style boot camp for youth who have committed offences, and it's had calamitous results, with 80% reoffending. There were staff who were having mental breakdowns. There were two children who ran away and one who tragically died in a fatal car crash. Does this disaster of a pilot program, you know, put an end to any thinking that we need to be hard on youth crime and that we should really embrace those solutions that you just put forth?
Just acknowledging that young person and their whānau who has died in the last year from that boot camp, and those around who tried to protect and support within that space. Acknowledging that firstly. And secondly, here is a report I'm holding on, it is a case study from the Royal Commission. It is named Boot Camp, Te Whakapakere Youth Program, a case study of state-funded violence and abuse of children and young people needing care and protection. In that report and case study, it outlined how boot camps systemically abused our children within that place and were enabled to do that, were funded and resourced to do that. Abuse was occurring, it was known, and it was left because actually what it showed is the state didn't love and care about those children, our children. What I would say in terms of the government response, their discussion around of pilot boot camp in the House, in Parliament, happened the week that the Royal Commission tabled its report and findings to the Governor-General and to Parliament. That just shows a complete disconnect. All parties in that House during that week acknowledged and said, and during Apology Week last year, acknowledged and said, we can never let this happen. And in the same breath, actively be funding and supporting and pushing institutions that abuse our children. Those things are not matched. So absolutely, we need to hold our approach to account, the politicisation of our children to account, the really explicit, and this isn't just unique to this government, like politicising children and young people and their whānau as whether they are worthy or they are inherently criminal without actually looking at the inherently criminal nature of the state and government and their responsibility. We need to stop criminalising, alienating children and young people and members of our society where harm is occurring, and the harm is occurring by the state and its actions. We need to stop doing that because it's not actually addressing stopping abuse and actually the harm that happens within our communities. When people... Oh, I'll stop there, otherwise I start going into a TED talk set, but just to be firm around that, like the politicisation of children and the othering of these issues, that is the problem.
It is. Well, there's one glimmer of hope here. Horizon Research has released a report which shows that a majority of the New Zealand public believe that we can improve our state care system, we should do more, and that survivor experiences are valid and they need to be redressed. Do you think that this momentum demonstrates that this is something that no government can ignore and that, you know, the political will from the public is there to really help these folks who have been through hell?
Yes, the Human Rights Commission commissioned that poll, Horizon poll, to test where our communities are sitting and people are sitting, as we realise that the responsibility for change, there needs to be an awareness and a knowledge from everybody, from our populations, that this is something that affects all of us. There was a risk that the Royal Commission report, it's huge, it's massive, it's like over 15 kilograms of documents and recommendations, that they could turn into a yellow pages where the government said, we're sorry, and then Haere Tonu carry on with no action. Refind my placing
Train of
on
thought.
this.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry, Zach, what was the part again? Because I'm
You're
start going
okay.
down a different lane.
You're okay. I was just saying, with this new Horizon research poll, it
Yes,
seems like
sorry. Yep.
it demonstrates that this issue is something that no government can ignore any longer, whether that's blue, red, or
Yes.
multicolored.
Absolutely. I mean, it was overwhelmingly the majority of respondents today. It was over 90% said this is something that can't happen again. And for us, it's really important to know that the burden doesn't sit on survivors to
Doesn't.
make the change occur. It comes from all of us, and we have power in that. And sometimes when the issue is so overwhelming and complex, people can struggle to be like, what is my role in this? Your role is to talk about it within your whānau,
Public
within the
sphere,
groups that you are
yeah.
engaged in within your mahi. What is your sphere and influence? And there are some things, like if it's hard to go, what do I do? Actually, one of the immediate actions you could do, if you have the capacity and space and you want to do something about this, is write to your local MP, whoever that is, and just say, what are you doing on the implementation of the Royal Commission on Abuse and Care? And something to hang your hat on as well is like the explicit, when is the recommendation around, are you committed to seeing the implementation of the independent redress system that survivors have and the commission have come out and said, which, just to put that in normal language for everyone, because I recognize redress may be a bit sort of like a bit wee wee wah
But
wah, but
abstract, yeah.
it's about restoration, it's about healing. When a harm is done, if something happens in your whānau, actually, I'll probably had a, in my kids there in Kura, and there was a bit of a whawhai, a bit of a fight between two of the kids, including one of our kids at the Kura. They got whacked around a little bit, but we as a whānau have come in, and the school's responding to say, let's come in as a whānau and acknowledge, and that the kids have the space to talk and they can acknowledge what hurt was done, and then actually, how do we go about restoring? That's a simple example of a process.
Reconciliation.
Of re reconciliation, and ultimately, survivors have spoken to say, actually, they get to decide what care they need in their lives. They get to decide what they need, not just monetary. It's not just about money. It's about actually, do you need to be? What does it look like for you, who's been abused, perhaps disconnected from your land, your family? That survivors can, they have the right to say what they need and want, and that the system responds to that.
It can be legal support. It can be cultural needs. I was reading a spin-off article with about someone who was on the Royal Commission of Inquiry, and they said that for many of the survivors who went and joined a gang, like doing something is getting something like a bank account is tricky. So that there's all manners of support that these folks need,
Because they don't have a driver's license, or
Exactly,
like
yeah.
even going through the process of like trying to share your story, a number of our whānau, a disproportionate number of survivors within that, don't have literacy because they were ripped away from schools or they were disconnected, so they don't have literacy. But they're asked to engage in a process that requires them to write and recount A, their trauma, and B, to do it in a way that a policy person in Wellington can understand. Ka.
It's very rich, isn't it? Well, I really want to thank you for your time and coming on the program today, Julia, and talking to me about this issue. Some strong things I've taken away is that, it's really on the public to be doing as much in private and in public to support survivors, whether that's caring for your mates who have been through the system or advocating on their behalf. And as well as that, this isn't a political issue. This is a human rights issue. This is a moral issue, and it's clear cut, and it's still happening. And those are the things I've really taken away. And I really want to thank you for enlightening myself and the audience on this matter. Do you have any final thoughts or considerations for our lovely audience?
Thank you, Zach, and Otira kia koutou, for listening. I know that this can feel hard, but we have power in what we can do in the lives that we have. Again, for those of you who it's hard to be in New Zealand and either not be direct, we are directly impacted in this system, whether you know in this abuse, whether you know or not consciously, just be gentle with yourselves, hold with love, and to all our purupura ora ngā mōrehu. Mihi aroha kia koutou. It is incumbent on all of us as your whānau. I want you to know you are loved. You are always loved, and it is our commitment, as a country, remains our commitment, and certainly remains mine, that we make sure that you are listened to, and this doesn't happen again. Nui te arawha.
Thank you very much. All right, folks, that was Julia Faipoti from the Human Rights Commission. We're talking about survivors of state here and what we can do to help them and so much more.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.